What does with all mean? We sing it. Let us bow down with all. I turned on my phone and looked it up. It means in addition. I've sung that for 50 years now, and I never knew what bowing down with all meant. Today, I'm talking about one of the most hated, awful things in the world. I have to use a phrase in the English language that propels people to anger, frustration, and doing things that they wouldn't ordinarily do. I'm sorry to use this kind of language in front of impressionable young people and old people, but sometimes you just have to. The two words that I'm putting together today are, I shudder to even say it, homeowners association. See? It strikes a chord. Many of you know that I was president of a homeowners association in Strongsville for 5 years. And here's what happened. We moved to Strongsville in 2013, and we enjoyed the house, and we enjoyed the location, and we enjoyed having our lawn mowed for us and our snow removal and the outside, the exterior of the house maintained. And we enjoyed meeting our neighbors. And then, you know, as we talked to people, when we moved in, I'd never lived in a homeowners association before. And I was learning what a homeowners association was and what it did and didn't do. And I met the president, lived next door, and there were three board members and a treasurer and a secretary. And at the before the 2015 meeting, so we'd lived there 2 years, I was asked if I would be okay with my name being put in as a board member. And I thought, well, you know, I need to contribute here. I'm reaping the benefits. And there's three board members, and I can learn the ropes, and I don't know anything about running a homeowners association, but this will be a chance to learn. I'll have some time. Well, I went to my first board meeting, and the other members of the board nominated me for president and voted me in all but unanimously. There was one abstaining vote, which was me. So suddenly I was homeowners association president. I didn't know what a homeowners association did. We only had 40 houses. They can be quite huge, but it should have been a manageable thing. As time went by, you know, I didn't know what to do. I read the rules. I tried to enforce them in a kind and gentle way. I tried to meet people. It wasn't too long before everybody hated me, and I couldn't get people to help me. And we moved away in 2019, and we didn't move to get away from the Homeowners Association, but I can't say that it didn't enter into the decision. And now I wake up in the morning, and literally 5 years later, I lie there and I think, thank you, God, that I'm not part of a homeowners association. Since then, though, I've thought about the experience quite a bit. And part of the reason is unusual. The people who bought our house, they weren't very nice when they bought our house, but afterwards, I would get mail there. Some of it was checks from customers and things like that. And they would call, and I would go pick up the mail. And I got to know them a little bit. We talked about the gardening, the changes they made. And he became the new homeowners president. And so it could be the house. We live near a creek, and all kinds of things have happened. Since I left, two houses actually fell into the creek. Well, they were demolished before they fell into the creek, so they're down to 38. But I still think about homeowners associations a lot. I definitely learned a lot, and I have to admit that they were things that helped me now and that will help me in the future as a child of God. I wasn't a very good homeowners association president, and I'm not just being humble. I earned that. Thinking about the ways I could have done it and ways that some people have done it, I think I fall short. But now I think I could be a decent homeowners association president. I think that the experience of being in a homeowners association has direct application to our journey as children of God and our destiny. And if it doesn't with yours, it does with mine, and it's my sermon. So let's talk about homeowners associations. In principle, they're good things. When you find out that you live in a homeowners association, you realize that they were founded to keep a community running well and to add to residents' benefit and enjoyment. That's usually even in the founding documents. Things like lawn care, snow removal, a swimming pool, maintaining the home exterior were included where we lived. It varies from association to association. And homeowners associations operate on the basis of common interest, that they do what's good for the community as a whole, and they depend a lot on community participation. When I started out, I had to learn the rules, and it was one of the, I went back and I still have on my computer some of the old documents and meeting minutes and things like that. I could delete them, but it was helpful for this because I had kind of a timeline. When I first was president, and I was really, the phrase is at sea, I was swimming in depths over my head. I didn't know what I was doing, but I read the rules, which most people don't, by the way, and I knew what they were, and I tried to enforce them, and that was the way that I looked at it. And when I say enforce, I mean I tried to make sure that things were done the right way. I was an enforcer and defender of the rules. The rules come in three categories, which are interesting. Homeowners associations have what they call their covenants, which rings a bell, and those are the inviolable rules by which they were founded, usually, always, according to state law, and have to be approved by the state. Then there are the bylaws, which the board can change and people vote on, and then there are the simple operating rules and regulations, which board members can change at their whim. I'm not their whim, I mean at their meetings. Because I was a staunch defender of rules, and that's the way I looked at my position at that point, because I didn't know what else to do, I made enemies. It probably would have helped if I didn't refer to the residents as the villagers. There was a man named Bill Horner, and the question was, can I replace my roof shingles with a textured shingle instead of a flat surface shingle? And the rules were very clear that no, he couldn't, and I sat there and I told him that, and he told me that he would hate me for the rest of his life. He died in 2019, so I'm out from under that obligation. But and later on, you know, thinking about it, as a board, we did change the rules. It was while Bill Horner was alive, and so he hated me even more after that. But, I made enemies. Some people came simply to be taken care of. They moved in, they wanted us to do everything for them, and they never helped. And this got worse and worse over the course of 5 years. And I could not get people to help me. I couldn't get new people to serve on the board. We were what the AARP calls a NORC, which is a naturally occurring retirement community. There was nothing in our bylaws that said you had to be retired or older to live there, but that's the way that it worked out. And so one of our problems was people dying, and it was difficult to replace people on the board at that point. And at the end of 5 years, I just had enough, and we both agreed. We moved to Berea for other reasons. We really did. We were looking for a specific kind of community to live in that Strongsville wasn't, and we're very happy that we made the move. But at that point, I was only just beginning to see the big picture both of what our community was and what it could be, and also the big picture of how it could be governed. Towards the end, I contacted and worked closely with the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District because, as I said, we had a creek. There's still a creek there. It was Blodgett Creek Trail, and it's Blodgett Creek there, a historic creek in Strongsville. And it was eroding the soil near people's houses, and that was what eventually led to those two houses being demolished. And thankfully, I was starting to like I said, get the big picture and starting to be proactive about certain things. And because of my contributions in that way, it helped them even after we left. So when I think about the Homeowners Association today, I think about how I should have done it and how I could have done it and how remarkably similar it is to our individual life in the church. Well, the first thing is, I should have had a learning period. I should have come in and served on the board for 2 or 3 years, got the hang of how things worked, how the budgets worked, how working with our attorneys and our assurance people and facing crises and things, I should have found out how that worked. And I didn't have time to do that. As I said, I just jumped in feet first into deep water. But that's the way we are. You know, we come into God's church, and we are babes in Christ, and people help us. People are happy to help fill us in on things that we don't know and things that we should know. People are happy to show us their love and feed us and take care of us in different ways. And hopefully there's kind of like a gestation period where people who are new to us are taken care of that way. And that would have really helped me. I should have had a learning period. Well, the first thing I did was I learned the rules. And isn't that what we do? When we come into God's way of life, we learn the rules. That's how we start out. If you turn to Galatians 3, very well-known verse, where Paul tells us about these rules. And you know how it is. You come in and to the church, I mean, you can think about your own journey and you think, well, I pretty much know everything because I've done all 24 lessons of the correspondence course. And then you get there and the greeter tells you about third tithe and, you know, all kinds of things that you didn't know about. We learn the rules, and we're very happy to teach people rules. But at the beginning, it's rules, rules, rules. And in Galatians 3:24, Paul says, and in the New International, which I use, it's not so clear. In the New International, it says, but this, where am I looking? So the law was put in charge to lead us to Christ that we might be justified by faith. Well, this is the verse that calls the law a schoolmaster. And it is. The law is a teacher, and it's very good when we first come into the church to be law-oriented, to be regulation-oriented, because, you know, most of us are facing that. We're now keeping a law about the Sabbath that we didn't always know about before. That's often a new one for people. And that's very important. We want to know God's laws because they teach us about God, and we want to know his ways. And so at that point, it is a schoolmaster. It teaches us about God. We also learn which rules are written in stone, and that's an interesting phrase because that's a phrase that's used the world over. Well, is it written in stone? Well, where do you think they get that? There is a set of laws that were written in stone. And people sometimes seek to change them, but they're written in stone. They're like the covenants of a homeowners association. And again, covenants is an interesting word. We learn that some laws are non-negotiable, that they're the way God wants us to do things. But some things we can change. For instance, we know in Leviticus 23 that we're commanded to keep God's feasts, his festivals, and those, our spring holy days are coming up. We don't fudge on that. We don't negotiate it. We do it. But the way that we do it has changed over the years because we can change that kind of thing. So we learn which rules are inviolable and which ones that can change with the board and residents' approval. And we have a council of elders, that's our board in our church, and different details can be changed. Some can't, some can. Number two, I should have gotten to know the residents first. I should have had time to get to know the residents, and I should have made an effort to get to know the residents first. I didn't. Instead, I would show up at their house and tell them that their satellite dish was in the wrong place or things like that, and that's always a great way to get to know people. I should have capitalized on their talents. I should have found out what their talents were. I should have worked with them as friends, and I should have capitalized on their strong points, not their weaknesses. It's funny because I got to know some of them much better after we moved from that street through Facebook. Some of them friended me on Facebook, and we sort of stayed in touch. Well, what this means is I cannot make snarky comments about Homeowners Association on my Facebook page because because some of my former villagers will be reading it. But some of these people, it turns out, well, almost everybody on the street, they were quite accomplished people. Just by the fact that they had lived a full life and retired, it also made them strong-minded. They were smart. They were talented. And so they were a difficult group to rule. I mean, that's not what homeowners associations do. But, you know, they all had their own strong ideas about things. Well, I should have gotten to know that. It turns out the woman across the street had a doctorate in horticulture and lawn care. Why wasn't I consulting her when we were doing landscape contracts and things? You know, and up and down, okay, my big mistake. Towards the end, we had a new person move in. And I was trying, they were people who spent half the year in Florida. And they just wanted their place taken care of. They didn't want to participate at all. So I was a little irritated by this whole approach, but I went and talked to them, and I said, I asked for their phone number, and they didn't want to give me their phone number. I said, look, we really need it. And they said, well, you're going to put it in the directory, and people will be able to get a hold of us. And I said, yes, that's part of living in a community like this, but it's not like I'm going to give it to insurance salesmen or something like that. He said, why'd you say that? I said, I don't know. He said, I'm an insurance salesman. And so I checked him off the list. Haven't been in touch with him since. But, you know, I should have known what they did. I should have found out about them. And, pardon the expression, I should have put them to work. I should have used their talents in places where we could have really worked as a team. And when you turn to 1 Corinthians 12, this is really kind of what Paul is talking about, that there's all kinds of people in our church, and then it's made up of people with all different abilities. In 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 12, he says, the body is a unit, though it is made up of many parts, and though all its parts are many, they form one body. So it is with Christ, and we were all baptized by one Spirit into one body. And it talks about, you know, whether we're different from each other, Jews, Greeks, slave, or free, then we have a lot in common. But in verse 14, the body's not made up of one part, but of many. There's many different talents and many different abilities, and that's what it says down in verse 27. Now you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of it. And I feel like I'm very happy in our Grafton congregation that most people are finding out what part of the unit that they are. The people are working together and participating. We have a great percentage of people who serve in this congregation. It's not hard to find people to do things. It's because there's so few of us, sometimes we feel like we're all doing it over and over again, but that's common to all of us in this little congregation and in all little congregations over the face of the earth. Another thing is that I feel that our pastor and his wife do a lot to encourage and foster talent, and that's that the church was not always that way. And it's much better that way, church-wide. And so that's a part of being part of God's community. Number three, I should have been more proactive. In Matthew 11 and verse 12, I think, I don't have this one written down, Jesus is talking about John the Baptist. verse 12. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been forcefully advancing, and forceful men lay hold of it. You may have a translation that calls it men of violence and violent men, and that means energetic people, people who look at a situation and do what needs to be done. And that's not my nature. I've had to learn to do that. I think I'm better at age 70 on doing things like that than I was at age 25. I remember being in a forest fire with one of my best friends, the man who got me interested in the church, and here's the tree, and we could both tell that the tree was going to fall. Here's Dave, my friend. Tree starts falling. Here's Dave. Dave runs. Tree falls. Dave has outrun the tree. Here's Mark. Mark is standing at the foot of the tree. Tree is falling. Tree starts to fall. Mark steps two steps backwards. Tree falls. Misses Mark. Mark's still here today. But that's the kind of person I am. I'm not one who outruns the tree. I'm one who takes two steps back. And I hope I've learned to be a different kind of person. And when God tells us to work to build a temple, that I do that. I should have seen the big picture from the beginning. I should have looked at our group as a community. Nobody is better equipped to see big pictures than we are, because we celebrate big pictures. We keep God's holy days and we understand his plan, and there's no bigger picture than God's plan. We don't even understand how big the picture is. Rules help us see the big picture. Back in Galatians 3 and verse 24, which we already read, the verse about the law being the schoolmaster, it's important how that verse finishes up. Verse 24, so the law was put in charge to lead us to Christ that we might be justified by faith. So the law is a schoolmaster, but what is it teaching us? It's teaching us to be led to Christ, to see the big picture. And I have a picture that I've asked our audiovisual people to put up for you. This is a sculpture, if we can get it, that is at the Butler Institute of American Art in Youngstown. Which is, Taya's in my favorite art museum, and we occasionally go there. Well, I'll just describe it if it's difficult to come up. It's a wire concoction, and it's all different tangled wires twisted in all different forms. There it is. And you can see all the tangles and tangles, but the light is shining from the upper right. And when the light shines on that twisted tangle, that bunch of details, that figure of a human being is just the shadow that those all cast. And they all work together to show that shadow of a man dressed in a business suit. He's not there. What we have is the little details, and the little details help us see the big picture. Well, that's kind of an analogy of one of the ways that we learn about God. As I go on in life, I don't always consult the rules anymore. I know enough about God to know, well, what would God want me to do in this situation? And sometimes I have to check the rules and the bylaws and the rules and regulations and covenants, but I'm generally right, because after all these years of obeying the little things, I have the big picture in mind. What is the big picture? Well, most succinctly, it's God himself. The big picture that includes us, though, is perhaps not exactly what you think it is. We think of personal salvation. We think of lounge chair on the beach with people bringing us drinks. We think of vine and fig tree. We think of bringing wrongdoers into line and enjoying the process. We think about us, and that's a good thing. I mean, that's part of the appeal of God's kingdom. But when Jesus talks about a big picture, he talks about giving his servants cities to rule over. And that may not be your cup of tea, but apparently it's his. There's a parable in Luke 19 and other places. And yes, those are parables, but sometimes it's quite literal. Where in Matthew 19 and verse 28, I'm not going to turn there, but it's where it talks about the 12 disciples ruling over the tribes of Israel and the world tomorrow. And that's very literal. In Ezekiel, let's turn to Ezekiel 37, because that's a very poignant set of verses where it talks about David ruling over Israel. This is the Valley of Dry Bones chapter, but here we're at the end in verse 24 of Ezekiel 37. My servant David will be king over them, and they will all have one shepherd. They will follow my laws and be careful to keep my decrees, laws, rules. They will live in the land I gave to my servant Jacob, the land where your fathers lived. They and their children and their children's children will live there forever, and David, my servant, will be their prince forever. I will make a covenant of peace with them. It will be an everlasting covenant. I will establish them and increase their numbers, and I will put my sanctuary among them forever. My dwelling place will be with them. I will be their God, and they will be my people. Then the nations will know, because this is just one nation, that I, the Lord, make Israel holy when my sanctuary is among them forever. In other words, we'll have the biggest homeowners association of all with our president living with us. Right now, he lives in his heavens. And when we are ruling with Jesus Christ in Revelation 20 and verse 6, but I don't even have to turn there, it says we will reign with him. And reign means you will govern. And govern means it's some kind of association. And let's just think of it as a homeowners association on a very large scale. Everything's a homeowners association. A congregation, a city, a country. We can look around at different ways things are run. Berea, where I live, is run pretty well. It's a little town, has about 17,000 people if you exclude the college, and we try to. Doesn't always work. But it's run very well. We're very happy with it. It's not perfect, and there's people who are unhappy with it, and you know, there's clashes and things. But it's run well, it's run on budget, and it's in the black. As an example of a horrible homeowners association that's in the news right now, think of the nation of Haiti. Haiti is positioned to be an absolute jewel and an absolute paradise. And yet, since the time way before I was born, it's always been a mess, an unsolvable mess. The only solution for Haiti and the people who are suffering there on a daily basis and have for decades and decades and decades is for Jesus to return and establish his rule. But once he's done that, and once he's taken over, how do we solve Haiti? Well, we do it with the principles of a homeowners association. We teach them the laws. We supervise them, we enforce them, we work with them as individual people, and we teach them how to live for the benefit of the entire community. And I'm looking forward to the time when Jesus Christ appoints someone who is not me to fix Haiti. I will enjoy watching someone else do it. But, you know, it'll just be so inspiring and so uplifting, but it can't happen today. The Bible ends with a picture of paradise revealed by Jesus Christ himself. What is it? Is it a commune in the wilderness? Nope, that's in chapter 12, the place of safety. The final picture is a densely populated city, so dense that it's as tall as it is wide and it is broad. And maybe that just means it's in a world that we, with our own picture of worlds, can't understand at this point. But it's a densely populated city, and that's where God the Father and Jesus Christ live, and they're happy, and people are happy. It's just a huge homeowners association. They're our future. So you can tell from the way I talk, you think, Mark really wants to go back to a homeowners association. No way. I wake up, as I said, thankful every day that I'm not in one, but I treasure the lessons I learned, and I look forward to putting them to use with you in the future.